Furniture manufacturer Ashley Furniture is facing a $1.77 million fine from the Occupational Safety and Health Administration for safety violations at its Arcadia, Wisconsin-based factory. Over a three-and-a-half-year period, 4,500 employees at Ashley Furniture Industries in Arcadia experienced more than 1,000 work-related injuries. And what we're asking today on the Joy Cardine Show is, how common are workplace safety violations? We'll be talking with both a Wisconsin-based and a national guest expert about how well companies are taking care of employees in risky occupations. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Joy Cardine Show on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. My first guest in this hour is Janie Ritter, the director of the Wisconsin Safety Council, the division of the Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce. Janie Ritter, good morning.
Good morning.
So how much of an outlier is this Ashley Furniture case, or is this descriptive of the general workplace in Wisconsin?
No, it is not a general description of the workplace in Wisconsin. This case in particular is a real outlier. In fact, I think it's probably one of the largest ones that that has been around for a while. But it is not indicative of the Wisconsin workplace currently.
Well, I mean, there are some things about woodworking in general and making furniture. You have to use a lot of machines that that cut wood in various ways or shape it. A lot of blades, a lot of whirring, moving parts with sharp edges. It would seem that this is sort of an inherently dangerous workplace. Are there a lot of other job classifications in Wisconsin that have similar risks? I'm thinking maybe logging, for example.
Sure, logging is a high risk as well. However, in Wisconsin, based on 2013 data, veneer and plywood manufacturing, which is probably what's going on at Ashley, amongst other things, they have the highest incident rate by industry in Wisconsin, followed by non-ferrous metal foundries and tool and die manufacturing. And so those are really the highest risk manufacturers by sector in Wisconsin right now.
And I know, if you drive past factories around Wisconsin, and I live in Superior, we have an oil refinery here, and I know every time I drive by there, there's a big sign that says X number of days without a lost time injury. The railroad yard here has one as well. This is a really, worker safety is a really big deal. It's a big point for a lot of these companies to let people know, hey, we're doing what we're supposed to keep our workers safe. That's just good business, isn't it?
That is great business. You know, I do a lot of touring around Wisconsin in our member locations and our non-member locations, and every time I walk through a manufacturing plant, you will see those signs that are celebrating their longevity. And it's very important to their employees to see that because, you know, we are all inherently kind of competitive people. And so they take very much pride in the fact that they've gone 1 million hours without a lost time or 375 days. So not only do they have those up in plants, but I can tell you in the Quick Trip location that's in my hometown, they put it right out in front, right behind the cash register. And I think it's awesome that they're letting their customers know that they're also, doing business with a company that is safe.
Are there occupations that we don't think of as risky that actually have some risks attached to it? I was thinking about there was an NPR story I think it was either over the weekend or it was last Friday. The days all kind of run together for me sometimes. that talked about how risky it is for nurses, for example, and they have to do various kinds of lifts. And I guess I had never really thought about that. So are there some occupations that we don't really think of as risky that have some risks?
Well, sure. Nationally, again, according to 2013 data, the leading risky sector is actually air transportation, followed by nursing and residential care, because those folks are, you know, lifting patients and doing things that are strenuous to their bodies. So they are definitely more at risk. And then courier services, you think about, they're driving every single day, and car crashes are the second leading cause of unintentional death. So those kinds of industries, you know, typically people think that that in the private sector that there are a lot more dangerous occupations, but those are the leading causes. And obviously another very risky is, you know, your protection services, your police and fire. Mm-hmm. But that's really under the government sector.
Right, right. Of course, there's always going to be pressure to have to produce more and to do it a lot faster, and that would seem to me that there's kind of an inherent conflict between that, wanting to get more done, more production, do it faster, get it done cheaper, and worker safety. How does that get resolved?
Well, I think that gets resolved by including all levels of employees in their safety program. We kind of refer to it as team safety, where not only do you have safety professionals looking at the health and wellness and safety of their employees, but they really include all employees. And so you have folks from the financial side, you have folks from the production side, you have management there. So it's really kind of more of an inclusive project. And that's one of the things that Wisconsin Safety Council, our focus is injury prevention and education. And we do that by providing training through seminars and conferences to employers on things like OSHA compliance, everywhere from, you know, understanding the regulations to training their employees on how to train each other on those things.
Well, I'm glad you brought up OSHA, because they were the OSHA was the organization that that brought the complaint against Ashley Furniture. And that we don't want to spend a whole hour talking about them, but that was our entry point. Wisconsin is governed by federal regulations enforced by OSHA. What do these regulations cover, and how are they enforced?
Well, you know, OSHA has regional offices all across the United States, and we have several here in Wisconsin, you know, Madison, Milwaukee, Eau Claire, and others. And so, you know, they have compliance officers that go out and they visit employers. They do it on a random basis. Sometimes they have certain topics that they are focusing in on. Temporary workers right now is a issue area that they are focusing on. But one thing that WSC, Wisconsin Safety Council, does is we partner with OSHA. We partner with OSHA, we partner with the Department of Workforce Development, we partner with a group, WISCON, and what we do is we work collaboratively with them and bring them in and have them as regular speakers at our training sessions. And we host OSHA construction breakfasts here in our building almost quarterly. And so we try to, you know, have OSHA have a presence with our training and have some comfortability and some dialogue between employers and OSHA outside of the fact of them ever coming into their business.
You, in addition to providing training and things like that, you also give out awards for workplace safety. What factors do you consider in rewarding workplaces for preventing injuries?
Sure. Actually, in April of this year, we will be hosting our annual Safety and Health Conference. And at that time, we will be handing out our 2014 Corporate Safety Awards. And this is the 21st year. We partner with the Wisconsin Department of Workforce Development. And some of the key factors that we look for are things like, and they're not in order of importance here, but your management involvement. Do you have buy-in from your management team, and what does that look like? How do you incorporate 24/7 safety, meaning safety on the job and off the job? Because the fact is that more employees are getting injured off the job and not being able to come to work. So businesses who have a great safety program look at what kind of hazards do employees have off the job, and how can they help mitigate that? Is it by giving them safety goggles so when they mow their lawn or do tree work at home, they're not getting something in their eyes? Or do they teach them about ladder safety, because fall protection is the leading cause of injury? So that's something that we look at. We look at their health and wellness programs. We look at how they integrate ergonomics into their business. So it is a really kind of multifaceted look at their company.
We're at a great spot here to take a break. I'd like to give our listeners a chance to get involved in this discussion as well. We're talking about workplace safety in Wisconsin. Our entry point was the $1.77 million fines being levied against Ashley Furniture for violations at their Arcadia, Wisconsin furniture factory. And these fines were given out by the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, OSHA. And we use that as our entry point, but this part of the hour we're talking with Janie Ritter, who is the director of the Wisconsin Safety Council, a division of the Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, and with you at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. Do you think workers are generally safe? Do you feel safe on the job? What do you think is needed to protect workers in high-risk occupations? And is the fine against that Ashley has received a fair fine for that company to face? Let us know what you think. 800-642-1234. Talk at WPR.org is the email address. And you can also find the Joy Cardine program on social media. Look for the Joy Cardine Show on Facebook and Twitter. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Workplace safety, just how safe are our workers in Wisconsin? That's what we're talking about this hour on the Joy Cardine Show. John Munson in for Joy Cardine. Janie Ritter is my guest in this portion of the program. She'll be with us until just after 8:30, and then we'll welcome another guest. But Janie Ritter is the director of the Wisconsin Safety Council. So we have a lot of people who want to join us by phone. Let's take some of those calls now. We'll start in Cottage Grove, where Mark is on the phone. Mark, hello. Thanks for joining us.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I guess I had two comments. I used to do OSHA-mandated safety audits for chemical safety. I guess one problem that I always ran into is we'd go to a place, a factory, and they'd say, oh, well, OSHA was just here. We're fine. And then I would go through and say, well, you're not fine. No, OSHA was just here. We're good. And then another OSHA employee would come through, and then they would just get hit with a laundry list of doom. And it's because not all OSHA auditors are created equal. I mean, some are trained in different things. They all come from different backgrounds. And I think that OSHA is addressing that with the National Emphasis Program. They're doing a lot of chemical safety training, and they're catching up. But the other problem is there are a lot of factories in Wisconsin and all over the country that they really have safety directors that are in the dark. I mean, there are universities that do training programs in every state. I mean, the UW is great at it. You can go anywhere, pay a couple grand, and get a great education on safety. But a lot of these places, it's not in the budget to educate people. And I really think it should be an emphasis to find the places that are in the dark and bring them into the light. I don't know how you do that. I mean, they're pretty cash strapped, but I think that's the, 'cause some places are light years ahead of others.
Mark, thanks. Thanks so much for that call. Janie Ritter.
Well, Mark, thanks for calling. You know, I think you're right. I think sometimes there's different levels of education, not an understanding and focus, not only you know, the inspector side, because sometimes they're, like yourself, you were saying you were more chemically focused than others. But you're just like in every other employer that they have only so much financial support for what they do. But I think that great companies, and we have a lot of great companies here in Wisconsin that do focus on safety, because quite frankly, it affects their bottom line. It affects their bottom line because if their DART rate, which is, you know, time away from work, and some other factors, but that DART rate is used when their workers' compensation insurance is calculated, how much companies are paying for their workers' comp. And if they're looking at their bottom line, they have to look and say, I'm going to make this investment to make sure that my employees are trained, that we are meeting compliance, not only just meeting compliance, but exceeding compliance, because at the end of the day, every business's goal is to make money. And so if they're not making money, or if they're spending too much money on insurance, they're going to be making different business decisions.
Mm-hmm. Mark, thanks so much for that call. Our next guest is going to be saying that OSHA fines are not big enough. And specifically, she's going to be talking about the Ashley Furniture fine is not big enough to deter some companies from ignoring worker safeties and worker safety, and thinks maybe fines should be higher and we need tighter regulation. Do you think that's a solution?
Well, I think the fines are extremely high, and I think they've gone up over the past few years. So I can't comment on any specific OSHA case, but
sure.
I think any kind of fine that a company is given is going to have an impact on their business. So, obviously the $1.77 million has an impact. I think, OSHA violations that run in the ballpark of $7,000 per violation or more, I would argue that does have an impact.
Of course, my understanding is that, this $1.77 million number is out there, but that won't actually be what they pay. Most of these fines are negotiated down considerably before they ever get paid. So, when we say $1.77 million, that sounds like a really big number, but that isn't that's probably not what's going to be paid, and that would be similar for other types of fines as well.
Yeah, and I don't have the information to tell you
sure.
what those are negotiated down to. What I can tell you is that the Wisconsin Safety Council and other organizations do a great job of trying to educate employees and employers about the necessity to have a safe workplace.
Mm-hmm. Let's take another call quickly from Gary in Milwaukee next. Gary, hello. Thanks for joining us.
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning.
One thing that I found comes very true working on a job, you cannot put a price tag on safety or someone's life. Like the old ladder that should have been thrown out in a dumpster years ago should be long gone. And one thing I'd noticed working for the state of Wisconsin for 29 years, now retired, the union brought a lot of safety into the job as far as equipment and safety equipment. And now we lost our union for state employees, and I'm worried that the safety factor is going to be dwindled down on money-saving measures.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Gary, thanks for the call. I know that you were talking about safety in the private sector, not with state government jobs, but I think Gary raises an important point. If a worker knows about a situation on their job where something is not safe, what should they do?
Well, first and foremost, I don't know any company that doesn't have some kind of process put in place where hazards like that aren't reported. Some companies have a very easy way, simplistic way of reporting those. If it's a small company and you just walk down to somebody's office and you report it, larger companies typically have some kind of management, safety management system where they walk over to a computer and there's a form right on the computer, and it takes them, you know, 20 seconds to fill out, let them know what the hazard is. And what ends up happening is that is then used by whomever is in charge of their safety program, whether it's HR, whether they have a designated safety professional on site. And that is logged, it is watched, and it is, you can see the progress that that incident or recognition of a hazard takes until it is resolved. And a lot of companies also, when they have their weekly meetings or every other week, they talk about those hazards and whether they're fixed or not. So I think that that there is a lot of good education going on to employees, because they're the ones that are doing the work. They're the ones that see the hazards. They know their equipment better than anybody else. And so they need to report that so it can be remedied.
Mm-hmm. What else could we do to improve worker safety in the state of Wisconsin?
Well, I think first and foremost is educate them, include them in some of your decision making, create a culture within your organization that they feel safe reporting things that they see, the hazards that they see. And I think once that is accomplished within an organization, you will see that there is a lot more ownership in safety, because at the end of the day, we spend more time with the people that we work with than we do our loved ones. And they are part of our family. And we care about one another. And so we want to protect each other. And if you create that environment of inclusivity and that culture, that you're going to see that any hazards that you have are going to be reported and they're going to be mitigated a lot quicker than if you have a culture that doesn't welcome that.
What can we learn? What's the takeaway from the Ashley Furniture situation?
Well, I don't know the specifics of that case, so I can't comment on them. I would just say, if in any organization, you need to look at what your key hazards are, and what that cost is to you, and to maybe there might be simple things that your organization can put in place. For example, I did a tour not too long ago in a manufacturing plant where they were having some issues with their forklift drivers not seeing all the people that were out on the shop floor. And so very simply, they painted some lines on the floor, bright colors, and that's where the pedestrians were supposed to be walking. And it eliminated the amount of near misses that they had out on their shop floor between pedestrian and their powered industrial trucks significantly, to the point where it almost reduced them. And so there's little things that cost them a bucket of paint, and it reduced their risk.
Well, most of the time, simple is better. Janie Ritter, thank you. Thank you so much for spending this time with us today. Appreciate it.
You're very welcome. Thank you for having me.
Janie Ritter is the director of the Wisconsin Safety Council, a division of Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce. We'll welcoming a different guest to further discuss this topic. And again, you're welcome to join us at 800-642-1234. Stick around. I'm John Munson. You're listening to this program on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Safety is what's on our minds today on the Joy Cardine Show. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine. We just heard from Janie Ritter of the Wisconsin Safety Council. Now we'll welcome in another guest to talk about workplace safety. Celeste Monforton, a professional lecturer in the Department of Environmental and Occupational Health at George Washington University, also former legislative analyst for the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, and has a master's degree and a PhD in public health. Celeste, welcome to the Joy Cardine program.
John, it's so great to be with you. Thank you.
So on the national scale, we started talking about the Ashley Furniture case. On a national scale, where does a case like the one involving Ashley Furniture stack up?
Well, it's certainly an egregious case, and if you look at OSHA penalties issued over the last 40 years, it falls into the top 25 highest penalties ever assessed by OSHA.
But that isn't what they're actually going to end up paying, is it? I mean, most of these penalties get negotiated down, and this isn't just true for OSHA. It's pretty much true for any federal regulatory agency that levies fines. There's a negotiation, kind of a plea bargain, and eventually what they actually end up paying is quite a bit less.
You're absolutely right. So OSHA, when they issue big citations like this, they're considered proposed penalties. And every company that gets citations from OSHA has an opportunity to challenge those citations. Sometimes it's done in an informal way. Other times it goes through a litigation process. But you're absolutely right. They will not be paying that $1.76 million. It'll be substantially less than that. But it does get the company's attention and gets them at the table with OSHA to try to figure out how they can eliminate the hazards that were causing serious injuries at that facility.
Well, I mean, even let's just say that that Ashley Furniture didn't bother to negotiate. They just said, you know what, we're just going to pay it. I mean, for a company that has more than $3 billion in annual sales, $1.77 million doesn't seem like an awful lot of money.
No, it's really a slap on the wrist for big companies, and that's one of the problems that we have, that those of us who look at worker health and safety issues have with the current penalty structure that OSHA has. One, the penalties haven't been updated by Congress since 1990, so the current maximum penalty that OSHA has for a serious violation is only $7,000. And it's often, that's not often what they assess. The penalties are not structured so that they're really more meaningful for large employers. You know, it's $7,000 whether you're, mom and pop furniture maker versus Ashley Furniture. The agency doesn't have the authority to issue penalties, let's say, based on revenue or sales, or number of employees.
Mm-hmm. Is the rate of deaths on the job has gone down by 81% since OSHA was created in 1970. Is that good enough? Is OSHA working?
Well, it's certainly situations and workplaces are certainly much safer than they were in 1970, even 1980 or 1990. The rate of fatalities has gone down substantially. But what's very troubling is the ways that workers are injured and particularly killed on the job hasn't really changed. You know, workers continue to get electrocuted. They fall from roofs. They're dying in trench collapses. And what's troubling about that is those are all ways that we know how to prevent those fatalities. So just imagine if we were to eliminate those kind of fatalities almost to zero, we would really make such a big dent in the numbers of workers that are killed on the job every year in the U.S.
Well, we have some callers who want to join us, and I think Sarah from Zion, Illinois might be a good place to start this segment. Sarah, thanks for joining us. Go ahead.
Hey, thank you. Well, I used to work for UPS here in Illinois, and it was just such a stinky place to work because there were these trucks just idling inside all the time. I'm like 50 trucks. But there was always a few days during the year when I could breathe because all the trucks would be outside, and that just happened to be the day when the OSHA inspector had come. And I don't know if they knew ahead of time the OSHA inspector was coming or what, but... And I also just wanted to mention that I've read that OSHA is underfunded and also just simply does not enforce according to the law because, like a lot of government regulatory agencies, they're sort of in cahoots with business so that they don't have to really enforce the law properly. And, like, how about that big chemical explosion a couple years ago down south where there hadn't been an OSHA inspector, full inspection since the 80s? So,
Sarah, thanks. A lot to chew on there. Sarah, thank you for the call. Celeste, what about it? Are there enough inspectors, and are they doing their jobs?
Well, if you think about the number of inspectors that OSHA has compared to the number of workplaces, in the state of Wisconsin, for example, for the whole state, there are only 34 OSHA inspectors. So OSHA, even if they tried, they would only get to less than 1% of all workplaces in Wisconsin. So, you know, it's a daunting task for OSHA, and they don't have the resources to have inspectors have a very big presence in workplaces. Sarah raises a really important point about chemical exposures and diesel exhaust. OSHA does not have any standards on the books to be protecting workers from diesel exhaust. And that's one of the real gaps in the way the OSHA system works, is their ability to address chemical hazards is really behind the times. Sarah also mentioned whether OSHA inspectors, you know, knew ahead of time. That's actually something that is prohibited in the statute for OSHA, if they're going to be doing an unannounced inspection, to notify the company in advance. But it doesn't take, a company who wants to skirt the law, as soon as the OSHA inspector shows up at the front door, it doesn't take that long for the company to, shut off the machinery that's hazardous or, take some steps so that what the OSHA inspector sees is not necessarily what goes on every day in the workplace.
Mm-hmm. In general, what's the picture of workplace safety in the nation? How common are cases like the one involving Ashley Furniture?
Well, overall, workplaces are a lot safer than they were even a decade ago. You know, far fewer workers are killed on the job, and far fewer workers are injured on the job. The Ashley Furniture case is really an egregious case. I mean, this is an outlier employer. When I look at workplace safety generally, you don't have employers that, have 39 machines in their factory that don't have proper safety devices. When I looked at that case, I was really shocked, because this is a billion-dollar company. And the vast majority of employers comply with the law. They try to identify hazards and fix the hazards. I heard a little bit of your segment with the earlier guest. And, yeah, there's always some very simple things that can be done in workplaces to look at what the hazards are and take steps so that you can avoid them. So workplaces and employers and workers themselves are much more conscious of safety problems and trying to correct those hazards.
I just found a statistic. We were talking about the number of inspectors compared to the number of job sites. And according to one calculation, using 2012 statistics, it would take OSHA 104 years to inspect every workplace in Wisconsin based on the number of inspectors available. So that puts kind of a little bit of a mathematical perspective on what we were talking about earlier. We're going to take a break when we come back. Go ahead.
I was going to say, that just shows you, even if OSHA's budget were doubled and they had 60 inspectors, the system was not set up so that OSHA's, at every workplace, making sure every workplace is safe. It's not OSHA's job to make sure workplaces are safe. It's employers' jobs to make sure that those hazards are eliminated and that workers go home at the end of their shifts.
800-642-1234, the number to call to join the program. We're talking about workplace safety this hour on the Joy Cardine Show. My guest in this segment of the program is Celeste Monforton, professional lecturer in the Department of Environmental and Occupational Health at George Washington University and a former legislative analyst for OSHA. We'll be back with more with Celeste and with you if you care to join us. Stay tuned. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Joy Cardine Show on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're Worker safety on our minds this hour on the Ideas Network. John Munson in for Joy Cardine. My guest is Celeste Monforton, a professional lecturer in the Department of Environmental and Occupational Health at George Washington University, former legislative analyst for OSHA, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration. And Celeste, one of the things that is true, and I don't want to just talk about Ashley Furniture, but generally, let's say that OSHA comes in and cites an employer for a safety violation. Does the problem get fixed immediately? Like, say OSHA comes in and says, listen, there needs to be X thing on X machine, and this is in violation because it isn't there. Does the company have to fix it right then, or do they get to wait until all the process has played out?
Right. There is nothing in the OSHA statute that requires the employer to fix that problem until after they go through any challenge that they want to make to the OSHA violations. And that's different than what happens at the Mine Safety Agency when people think about coal mining or salt mining or those quarries that are in Wisconsin. If an inspector finds a hazard there, the employer is required to fix it. They can still challenge that, the penalty amount or the severity, but under OSHA, an employer can challenge it, and there's no requirement for them to fix that hazard. So you can have workers who are still exposed, let's say at Ashley Furniture, to these pieces of equipment and machinery that didn't have proper safety devices and they didn't follow safety procedures. So if you have a company that just wants to dig in their heels and challenge the OSHA citations and drag it on for years, they are allowed to do that, and there's no requirement that they fix that hazard. Again, most employers, when they when OSHA comes and they see a problem, the employers will fix it right away, and they actually can get a reduction on their penalty. It's called a good faith reduction. They can get a reduction for fixing that hazard right away, but they aren't required to. And if you have a company that really wants to fight the OSHA citations and drag it on, they are not required to fix the problem.
Mm-hmm. Let's take another call. Tom in Burlington, we'll go to you next. Tom, hello. Thanks for joining us today.
Speaking of quarries in Wisconsin, if someone is putting dust in your property, you really have no way of any recompense. But what I wanted to say was, in these factories, if you will get the attention of the corporate owner, if the person injured can sue the company and the company that makes the machine. In Wisconsin, we have it leveraged here so that you can't sue them. In Illinois and these other states around Wisconsin, if somebody gets injured, they can sue anybody who made that machine and go on down the line. And this would give a real incentive for the companies to pay attention. I know one guy, he had his hand ripped apart with a drill press because the little thing that was supposed to guard wasn't on there, and it hadn't been on there for 2 or 3 years, and a couple of people had been injured. So this is a real problem.
Tom, thanks for the call. Is Wisconsin similar to other states in how these laws work, or are we kind of an outlier?
No, that's fairly typical. There's differences. Every state has its own workers' compensation laws. Workers' compensation was set up beginning in the 1900s, where it was kind of a grand bargain. Workers were going to be compensated both for their medical care and any lost wages, and in exchange, they gave up the right to sue their employers for hazards. And so that is the situation that we have in almost all of the states. So if you're injured on the job, you can't sue your employer. Tom is right. You may be able to go and sue the forklift company or the manufacturer of the forklift or manufacturer of the equipment. That would be a third party lawsuit. In some states, you can sue your employer for a serious injury or a fatality on the job if an attorney can prove gross negligence. So if it, something really egregious, there is a possibility in some states to do that. But Tom is right that
that for some employers that are, you know, blatantly going to disregard the law, there really isn't that threat of jail time because of the way the law is set up under workers' compensation. It would be extremely difficult to have an employer penalized for a hazard that they create.
Mm-hmm. Let's take another call. We'll go to Arcadia this time and hear from Bill. Bill, thanks for being here today.
Thank you, John. I just wanted to speak to the issue as a resident of Arcadia where this all took place. Number one, I have the opportunity to talk to a lot of supervisors and workers. I've lived here since 79. I've never worked at Ashley, but I can tell you that the people who are there are very grateful, and you know, to have this workplace where we employ 4,500 people, and also that Ashley is number one in the industry for safety record per 1,000 hours. So I know this is really a big highlight, and I, you know, I don't disagree that somebody like OSHA needs to. You know, I think that's wonderful that they do watchdog over these things, but I also think that it's an overstatement as to, you know, what the issue really, or how bad the issue really is. And in talking to one supervisor since this issue occurred, he said, you know, I was walking down, and he said we had installed a new machine just lately, and walking through, he said, you know what, the day after this occurred, I saw that one of the shields was gone. And he said, I know why they took it off, because they want to work faster because they're on a rate, you know. And so, you know, even though you put these things in place, employees are probably their worst enemies in terms of, well, no doubt are their worst enemies in terms of these safety things that occur and issues that are left unaddressed or, you know, removed from machines.
Bill, thanks. Thanks for that perspective. And that's, he raised a point that I really wanted to get to, and that is in some of these cases, you've got rules maybe in place within a workplace or factory, an assembly area, saying, you know, these things have to be here because this is about safety. But sometimes they're inconvenient, and you've got workers who are feeling pressured to produce more. And so in an effort to work faster, they'll remove stuff themselves. I mean, they'll make modifications to machinery. How can employers deal with that?
Well, there's two things that employers should do to deal with that. One is employers can set up whatever rules they want in their workplaces. And so if there are rules in place about not removing guards from machinery, those rules should be enforced consistently. And that there is, you know, a real attention to that, so that supervisors, every time they see a guard removed, you know, that they take appropriate disciplinary action. But the more important fact, what one of the things that Bill commented on is workers having some kind of incentive to work faster. You know, when companies set up production goals that really create an incentive for workers to take shortcuts to remove guards from equipment, they're only human. You know, it's human nature to want to meet those goals, to get that you know, pay bonus. And so companies that set up those kind of production goals are really creating an incentive in some cases to have the safety equipment like guards or other things on equipment disengaged. And so if you think back, you know, to the root cause of these kind of problems, you have to look at both of those, not just the workers' behavior. You know, why did they take the, you know, they should, shame on them for taking off the guard. But you have to say, well, why did they do it? And that there are some incentives there.
Sure.
I don't know. I can't comment specifically on on Bill's comment about the Ashley Furniture injury rate. I find it really hard to believe that that a facility where OSHA identified 1,000 injuries there would have a very good injury rate. Unfortunately, the public isn't privy to what that injury rate is, and we just have to take Ashley Furniture on their word. But I'm sure that that's one of the things that OSHA looked at when they were investigating the amputations that occurred at that particular facility.
Let's take a quick call from Eric in Appleton, and we're getting close to the end of the hour here, Eric, so I would ask you to be concise. Thank you.
Okay, I'll try to be quick. I work for a company that does on-site physical and occupational therapy, ergonomics, and safety throughout the Midwest. And what we see is companies can either focus on recordability, their OSHA compliance, trying to do best practices, or decreasing their compensation costs. And often those four things are very different things. And both OSHA and the companies are way too focused on the basic recordability, which could be very, very minor injuries, and not focused on the big picture. Think a recent example is OSHA recently ruled that kinesio tape, which is basically that stretchy athletic tape that you see, you know, the Packers are wearing it all the time to help with muscle recruitment, that would generate an OSHA recordable event. So then the company would have to list that as an injury if somebody gets taped, even though that's a big difference between that and an amputation.
Mm-hmm. Eric's saying a company spend too much money on compliance instead of general safety. Celeste?
Well, I can't say, I don't know if they spend too much on compliance. I do agree with Eric that you really need to look at the big picture. Things that are, minor kind of injuries may be informative. They may be close calls and perhaps would give you an indication that, you know, this was just because of luck something untoward happened. But it's really about looking at a workplace, seeing what those hazards are that can cause serious injuries and addressing those hazards.
Mm-hmm. What do we need to do to at the national level, maybe regulation or whatever, to improve workplace safety in the United States?
You know, I think that there are lots of good rules on the books that employers need to follow. So in many cases, they're not necessarily that we need more regulations on forklifts and electrocutions and trenches and machine guarding. We already have those on the books. Employers need to follow those. But we also have kind of the hazards which are not addressed currently by OSHA regulations. Sarah, an earlier caller, mentioned chemical exposures, things like diesel exhaust. Tom mentioned dust coming from quarries. Silica dust is not regulated by OSHA. Carpal tunnel syndrome, other types of repetitive motion, stress on the body types of hazards are not regulated by OSHA. So there are things that we could still do to make workplaces safer for workers.
And that's where we'll have to leave it. Celeste Monfortin, thank you so much for joining me this morning.
John, it was my pleasure.
This program was produced by Christy Taylor, who also directed the hour. On-air production by Kayla Blado. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.